You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the Inflation Reduction Act put a cap on out-of-pocket insulin costs for Medicare recipients. Did that lead to more people getting the medication they need? A Wisconsin expert digs into the change and what it means for people with diabetes. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about local music.
For a lot of folks in Madison, going to concerts on the square is a summer tradition. For some people, the classical music by the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra is the highlight. But for WPR's Bridget Bowden, the best part is a song called Home to Madison.
Picture this. You're sitting on a blanket on the Capitol lawn in Madison. It's a warm summer evening, and you're listening to beautiful classical music. You're feeling very fancy, sipping wine and eating cheese. But at the end of the concert, when you start to pack up your blanket, you hear this. This is Home to Madison, and it's not fancy. It's basically a country song. They play it at the end of every single concert on the square. And honestly, I love it. I mean, just listen to these lyrics.
Grilling brats on the barbecue. Friends and laughs and hey, what's new? I'm coming home.
So I wanted to know, what is the deal with this song? Where did it come from, and why do they play it here, of all places? I caught up with Andrew Sewell, the musical director of the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, to hear the story. He says it all started with Madison's sesquicentennial back in 2006. They were putting together a time capsule and wanted a signature song to describe Madison. They asked for songwriters to submit entries.
And we got it down to four finalists, and I just wasn't particularly enamored with any of them, and I thought, I know that we can do better than that.
So he called up a friend of his, an electric violinist named Tracy Silverman.
He said, hey, Trace, we've got this thing. Could you just write, say, maybe a 3 or 4 minute song about Madison?
A few days later, Silverman sent a demo of Home to Madison. The judges loved it so much that they made it the fifth finalist, added it to the time capsule, and of course, started playing it at concerts on the square. Silverman lives in Nashville now, but he does have roots here.
You know, I grew up in Wisconsin, and I have to admit, this is kind of on the DL, but I grew up in Beloit, not in Madison. But I spent a lot of time in Madison as a kid.
So he says finding inspiration for the song was easy.
You know, I learned how to drive a car, you know, on the country roads outside Beloit. And it was usually my job to grill the brats, and I'd have a grill full of brats just up in flames because of all that, you know, the way brats do when they grill. And all of that stuff was just in my mind.
Home, where I'm supposed to be.
Musically, he says he was going for something easy and fun to listen to.
I was kind of thinking John Cougar Mellencamp or something kind of like that, just sort of real straight up the middle kind of something that everybody would like.
The chorus is easy to sing along to, including my personal favorite lyric, just off Highway 51.
I'm coming home.
Just, even though nobody really calls it Highway 51, but it rhymes with Madison, so, you know, sort of.
Silverman knows that it's not the most serious song in the world, but that's the beauty of it, he says.
You know, if I lived in Madison as an adult, I might have had a much more nuanced view of the politics and the economics and all various things that are could be problematic and that people discuss as adults. And I didn't have any of that to burden me, you know. All I had was going swimming in Lake Mendota and stuff like that.
He says of all the music he's ever recorded, this song is probably the one that the most people know, thanks to concerts on the square. And he feels good about that legacy.
I couldn't be more honored to have the tune in people's minds as they're leaving that great venue and feeling like, you know, this is their home.
WPR's Bridget Bowden brought us that story on the unofficial anthem of concerts on the square, Home to Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Home to Madison.
Now, the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act capped the out-of-pocket cost of insulin for seniors on Medicare to $35 a month. Here's what President Biden had to say about it during this year's State of the Union.
But every day, millions need insulin to control their diabetes so they can literally stay alive. Insulin's been around for over 100 years. The guy who invented it didn't even patent it because he wanted it to be available for everyone. It cost the drug companies roughly $10 a vial to make that insulin. Packaging and all, you may get up to $13. But Big Pharma has been unfairly charging people hundreds of dollars, $400 to $500 a month, making record profits. Not anymore.
A UW-Madison professor is out with new research documenting the rising cost of insulin and how the cap is affecting seniors. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you rely on insulin? Are you on Medicare? Love to hear your experience. Have you seen a difference with this price cap in place? If you use insulin and you're not on Medicare, what are you seeing when it comes to the cost of this medication? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Rebecca Meyerson is an assistant professor of population health sciences at UW-Madison. Rebecca, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Let's talk about, before this cap, what were we seeing with insulin prices for Medicare recipients and I guess for everyone?
Well, this particular change only affected Medicare Part D beneficiaries. And in many cases, they did have insurance coverage and median spending was a bit over around $50 per month or so. So for many of these folks, it may not have been a big change. But that said, the amount spent out of pocket for insulin across all Medicare enrollees has really skyrocketed from about $200 million in 2007 to more than $1 billion in 2020. And a lot of that is individuals who maybe newly diagnosed. There's a lot of change in insulin need and diabetes prevalence. And total now, over 3 million Medicare beneficiaries do use one or more of the common forms of insulin.
Let's dig into your research now. Can you talk about how you tried to figure out the before and after impact of these caps?
Yes. So we took a look at data from IQVIA's National Prescription Audit. So that includes about 92% of retail pharmacies, 70% of mail order and long-term care facility pharmacies. So it's a pretty comprehensive data set. We looked at over 14 million insulin fills. And we compared trends from basically before the policy came into effect, which was January of this year, so September through December of last year, compared those data with what we see after the policy came into effect, which was January through April of 2023. And we used a study design that compares the changes in a group that was affected by the policy versus a group that was not affected by the policy. So given that there is nearly universal Medicare coverage at age 65, we thought that people who are age 60 to 64 who didn't have Medicare Part D would be a nice comparison group because they were likely to get it soon. So we compared, they were our comparison group, and we compared that with people who had just potentially just recently gotten Medicare coverage, people aged 65 to 74.
And then what did you find when it came to, you know, are people actually getting insulin prescriptions filled before and after and comparing those two age groups?
Yeah, so we had two main findings. First, it does seem like more people are getting their insulin for $35 or less, which is the new cap for people with Medicare Part D insurance. There was an increase in our group of 65 to 74 year olds of about 50,000 more prescriptions being filled with that cost or less to the patient per month. And that's about a 10% increase relative to before the policy. And the other main finding was that about 20,000 of those fills, so a little less than half, would not have taken place at all if it weren't for the policy. So that's about a 6% increase relative to baseline. So what that means for us is how we interpret those data is that this was helpful for people who were purchasing insulin anyway, despite the higher price. That meant they could have saved some money that could go to their other needs. And then there were also quite a lot of people who seemed to be foregoing insulin or not able to fill their prescription because of the cost.
And then for that slightly younger age group, people knocking on the door of Medicare eligibility, but not quite there yet, what were the trends for them? Because it could just be, hey, everybody is seeing the same kind of change. What did you see when you looked at that comparison group?
Yeah, absolutely. So one interesting thing about this policy is that it was enacted in January, so starting, you know, calendar year of 2023. And in January for patients, that's when deductibles reset for those patients who do have a deductible. And what we saw in the data is that in previous years, and also for those slightly younger individuals who didn't have Medicare Part D yet, there's a drop in insulin fills between December and January as people are more exposed to cost sharing. That's the time of the year when people are the most exposed to cost sharing because it's likely they haven't met their deductible yet. And so that drop actually was eliminated for those with Medicare Part D insurance only after the policy. So we saw that drop in January, just like the 60 to 64 year olds, if you look at the previous calendar year. But for that 2023, we no longer see that drop.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us in Milwaukee. Mike, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about?
I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I'm 66 years old. And I do not have Part D because I can't afford it. So I have to pay out of pocket over $150 a month for insulin, and there is no break for me anywhere. I've tried. I've talked to my doctor. I've talked to the pharmacy. There's no break. I've got all these receipts. I'd like to get my money back somehow, but I'm kind of stuck.
Mike, I'm so sorry to hear that. Best to you as you try to figure that out. And Rebecca, you made an important distinction earlier. I had just said people on Medicare have this cap. People on Medicare who have Part D, as Mike mentioned, he couldn't afford Part D. So this cap doesn't affect someone in Mike's position. Do I have that right?
That's right. There are, possibly in part in response to this policy, in March, there were a number of manufacturers that announced that they will be voluntarily capping insulin costs. And one of those was effective immediately with a coupon that can be downloaded by anyone. The others, I think, are coming into effect in 2024. But I wonder if there might be some relief out there, but it's true that unfortunately this policy that we were studying was only for the Part D beneficiaries.
Mike, thanks again for calling. Hopefully there will be some relief coming your way. We're talking to Rebecca Meyerson, Assistant Professor of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison. She has some new research on a Medicare insulin price cap for people on Medicare Part D, how it's affecting seniors, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Are you on Medicare Part D, receiving insulin? Have you seen this price cap kick in? What did that mean for you? Are you not on Medicare Part D? Whatever age you are, what are you seeing when it comes to the cost of insulin? How has it changed over time for you? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Rebecca Meyerson, Assistant Professor of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison, looking at insulin price caps and their effect on Medicare Part D recipients. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been affected by those price caps? Are you on Medicare D? You use insulin. Did you see this change? What did that mean for you? Do you use insulin, but you don't have that coverage? What are you seeing yourself pay for the insulin you need right now? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on this, your questions, maybe your experiences. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Let's go back to your calls. Matt is with us in Lodi. Matt, hi.
Hello. I just thought I'd share my situation. A few years ago, I went into the doctor at my wife's urging, and they did some tests. I had an A1C of 12.3. And so I was diagnosed type 2, put on the insulin and metformin, and I didn't like the side effects or having to deal with the medication. So I took it upon myself to radically change my diet. And I was, in my situation, was able to go from 12.3 to 6.2 and stay there over the next 3 years just by switching my diet. So I sometimes wonder if having federal dollars pushed towards nutrition versus the drug companies might not have a better outcome both in health and in cost for everyone that is in this situation.
Matt, thanks for the call. I'm glad that worked out for you. For some people, I think with type 2 diabetes, that could be an option. Rebecca, people with type 1 diabetes are pretty much going to need that insulin, as I understand things. But what do you think about Matt's comments, thoughts on prevention investment, nutrition investment, compared to putting money into prescriptions?
I agree. I think both are important. I agree that federal dollars should also go into nutrition programs that that is definitely part of, for example, the diabetes prevention program is something that's covered by Medicare. That's for people who whose HbA1c is would qualify them as being pre-diabetic. And that is a program that actually has been shown in a randomized trial to save money by preventing progression to type 2 diabetes, and lifestyle modification is a big part of that. So definitely commend that emphasis as well. But I agree with your point, as you were just mentioning, that some people really do need insulin, absolutely, to stay healthy.
Matt, thanks for the call at 800-642-1234. Rebecca, this new research we're talking about fits into, I think, a wider long-term interest of yours when it comes to, you know, the impact of things like cost and access on people being able to get healthcare, in this case, prescriptions. Could you connect to this particular study to some of the wider work you've been doing on how we get access to healthcare we need, whether it's prescription or otherwise?
Certainly. So we've also been looking at the Affordable Care Act and how that provided options to people with chronic conditions, whether that be the number of people with diabetes who have gained access to health insurance. We saw increases in that over time and slight decreases when there are the gains of in coverage for people with chronic conditions. After some Trump administration efforts to undermine the marketplace. So that seems like that's been something important, as well as the Medicaid eligibility expansions. That's a policy that's been in Wisconsin, we only did a partial expansion that was not using the federal dollars. So that's something that states that did take that on have seen an increase in diabetes prescription fills. And also just people being able to use and afford newer medications for their diabetes, whether that be medications that are more expensive but have a better side effect profile or are better for their concurrent comorbid conditions as well.
Talking to Rebecca Meyerson, Assistant Professor of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison, looking at a change in insulin rules for people who are on Medicare Part D, saw more people getting their prescriptions filled and paying less for them. People who are on Medicare Part D, you can still join in at 800-642-1234. Now, this is still early days, Rebecca. What are you looking for? What are you going to be watching moving forward when it comes to this Medicare Part D cap on insulin costs?
We'll be watching for a few different things. So first, insulin being so crucial for the health of people with more advanced type 2 diabetes or type 1 diabetes, where we will be looking for whether this change in prescription fills helps avoid complications by looking at hospitalization data, mortality data. We'll also be thinking about whether saving money on insulin helps people be able to afford their other medications, or, you know, seeing what other benefits people are experiencing as they're saving money on this important medication. So we'll look for spillover effects to what other medications they're able to fill now, just like how we saw that in the Medicaid eligibility expansion work. And then finally, we'll take a look at who benefited the most from this change, interested to see which geographic areas, which income brackets, et cetera, really benefited the most from this change.
And you mentioned some producers of insulin saying, okay, yeah, we'll match or at least bring down our prices more in line with this Medicare Part D cap that you said many companies doing that starting next year. Are you going to be watching that closely to see if younger people with diabetes are going to have lower costs?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that would be very important. Originally, as the Inflation Reduction Act is being worked on, there was the hope that commercial insurance would also have this cap. That ended up, of course, not making it into the act. But a good number of states have enacted a similar policy. So another way to look at that would be to look at the effects of the caps that would also affect the younger and commercially insured population in those states that chose to enact those. And that's mostly been happening since about 2020.
We'll leave it there. Rebecca, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Rebecca Meyerson, Assistant Professor of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison. We've been talking about the impact of federal price caps on monthly insulin costs. Still time for you to share your story, for better or worse. Have you seen the price of insulin change in your life? Have you been affected by these Medicare Part D price caps on insulin? Let us know. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Or you can post over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, the new Oppenheimer movie draws on the story of the development of the atomic bomb and the secrecy surrounding it. An expert on nuclear history and nuclear development secrecy joins us to dig into the past, present, and the future of nuclear weapons. And you could join in with your questions, maybe if you've seen the Oppenheimer movie, questions based on what you saw there. And who's the biggest jerk in your workplace? What if it's you? How would you know? Find out how to figure out if you're the problem coworker. Central Time producers are a little too excited when I pitch that. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. That and more, it's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up after the news, there are a lot of ads for gold coins targeting seniors in particular, and that's putting some retirement savings at risk. We'll check out the results of a new investigation into gold marketed toward older Americans. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, President Biden's son Hunter is facing criminal charges and a congressional investigation. Looks for the political and legal sides of the cases against him. First, if you're a frequent or even occasional viewer of Fox News, you're probably familiar with this type of commercial.
You invested in the stock market? In our world of fake news, here's what they're not telling you. Gold has outperformed the Dow for the past 17 years. That's the real news. Numbers don't lie. In the year 2000, if you invested $100,000 in the Dow, it would be worth about $197,000 today. But had you diversified just 20% of that into gold, your investment would be worth $248,000, 26% more. Call Lear Capital, the leader in precious metals investing, with over 20 years' experience and $2 billion in trusted transactions.
According to an analysis by the Washington Post, ads like this one from Los Angeles-based Lear Capital are a mainstay on not just Fox News, but also Newsmax, as well as podcasts featuring Republican Senator Ted Cruz from Texas and Rudy Giuliani. They didn't find any similar ads appearing on mainstream or left-leaning media. Lear is just one of many companies that target older viewers with pitches to invest retirement savings in their unique gold coins. But the investigation found that would-be investors paid high premiums for the products, in some cases leading to big losses in their retirements. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered those advertisements before? Where did you see them? Did they inspire you to invest in gold and these kind of gold coins in particular? Do you have a relative who paid attention to these ads and invested money for better or worse? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jeremy Merrill is a data reporter for The Washington Post, focusing on technology. His new piece he co-authored for The Post is called How Right-Wing News Powers the Gold IRA Industry. Jeremy, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
What led you to dig into this story of these gold coins advertised so heavily on certain media outlets?
That's a great question. This actually started several years ago. As was mentioned, I focus on technology primarily, and I was looking at political ads on Facebook. You ordinarily expect to see politicians asking you for donations. You expect to see outside groups saying, hey, you should change your views on this issue. You expect to see people selling merchandise. And then I was just really puzzled to see ads on Facebook targeting people who were 59 years old or older, and targeting people specifically who were politically conservative, people who were Republicans, people who were fans of Sean Hannity, that sort of thing. With ads, you know, they didn't have the name of a company. It was just saying, hey, join this webinar to learn how to protect your retirement from the Democrats' coming retirement kill switch, or something sort of overheated like that. It just sort of stuck in my craw. Like, what is this? It was confusing. I went down the rabbit hole and found this company called metals.com. Around the time we were looking into them, so were regulatory officials in a bunch of states saying their investors had been allegedly defrauded. They had put in hundreds of thousands of dollars and gotten gold and silver coins that were worth a lot less.
Let's talk
after about we did a story on that in 2019. I started getting emails and phone calls from people saying, hey, it's not just that one company. This is a whole industry.
And let's talk, Jeremy, about what this, how this industry works. Now, when people talk about investing in gold, they might be buying, you know, gold futures, where they never actually handle a piece of metal on their own. That's not the case with these so-called gold IRA companies. If I decide, hey, this advertisement sounds boffo, I want to invest, what happens? What do I get?
That's exactly right. Think about sort of ordinary choices might be to invest in stocks or bonds or mutual funds. If you're really into gold and silver, you can buy mining stocks or gold futures. Those are all options. You've also separately got people who are investing, so to speak, by collecting rare coins that really do have some historical value that they think, you know, someone's going to want this 1897, whatever. But what they're buying there is something that has some collectible value. That's not what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. With the gold IRA industry, most of these companies are selling what are called bullion coins, which means the coins get their value from being made out of gold or being made out of silver. And they don't have any sort of special historical value. In many cases, they happen to be made by the government of Canada, of all places, which sells bullion coins that are well known, called maple leafs, as well as some weirder ones that have polar bears or other sort of Canadian wildlife on.
And you talk...
There's nothing...
I want to get a case of like where this can go wrong. You talked to a guy named Ed DeSanto, 65-year-old, you describe him as a semi-retired Florida medical coder, identifies as politically conservative. He puts $100,000 into gold and silver in these coins. How much value in gold and silver did he end up getting?
What he ended up getting in terms of the weight of gold and silver he got was worth only $52,000, which is a big loss. You know, he invested in 2019, which turns out to have been, you know, if you had the power of hindsight, actually a pretty good time to buy gold and silver because the prices have gone up since then. Mm-hmm. You know, the price of gold and silver, it goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down, much like any other, anything else that you could invest in. But relative to 2019, the prices are higher now than they were then. But for his $100,000 investment, he cashed out a lot of it this spring. He still lost money, despite the fact that the market had gone up more than 30%. And that's in large part due to the commissions that he was charged by American Hartford Gold Group, the company that he invested with.
Talking to Jeremy Merrill with the Washington Post about his reporting on what's called the gold IRA industry. They advertise heavily on more conservative media, in some cases direct email and phone. You can join in by phone at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. We won't buy your gold, but we want to hear your stories. Tom joins us in Oxford. Tom, hi.
Well, good afternoon. I'm actually not selling my gold, but I have a little of advice on these companies. The first is, if they're trying to sell you an IRA, keep in mind, you do not take physical possession of the gold. They are storing it for you in a vault someplace far away. And frankly, do you even know that they put the gold in the vault? It is stay away in capital letters. If you want to invest in physical gold, the best move you can make is to visit a city with a United States mint. West Point, New York, Washington, D.C., for the headquarters building, Philadelphia, Denver, San Francisco, you can buy gold bullion coins literally at minimal markup. You know, they put it in a velvet case. And there's also no tax because you're buying it at a federal facility. And the coins that they want to sell you, they may be rare, but they're very often graded coins by a third party that have done their examination. It's PCGS and NGC, but ultimately you're buying a coin in a sealed plastic slab.
Tom, I got you. Gave us a lot to talk about there. First of all, Jeremy, I was a little confused about this. They call it gold IRAs, but a lot of these companies actually do provide you. You do end up with these coins. And I had thought, like Tom did, that if we're calling it an IRA, they'd be storing gold somewhere for you. Are both of these things happening?
In many of these cases, the gold is stored at a third-party depository, basically a bank. And so, you know, in many cases, you know, and in the cases of the companies that we discuss in my article, the gold and silver, they really do exist. And there's just this question over whether the customers really understood what they were getting. You know, the companies say their disclosure practices are all totally legal. The customers say they were shocked when they figured out what they had actually gotten. But there have been, as the caller noted, some instances, you know, including in the past year, and, you know, going back probably as far back as, you know, ancient Babylonia, of cases where people thought they were buying gold and it didn't really exist. It wasn't really in the vault. So there's all sorts of shenanigans that can take place. But in this case, yeah, a lot of people are using this, you know, totally legal, but kind of obscure practice to invest from their retirement savings in these products.
And Tom also mentioned, you know, if you really want to have gold coins in your possession, there are ways, or gold in whatever form, there are ways to buy it. And you have a follow-up piece with advice for experts. There are ways to buy it without these massive markups?
Right. You know, don't go out there and think that I'm saying you ought to do this or that you ought not do this. You just ought to be careful if you've already decided, hey, that's a good idea. A lot of financial advisors say investing in gold and silver is a terrible idea. Some say it's an okay idea, or even a good idea, as long as you limit it to a pretty small slice of your portfolio. But what I think everybody agrees on is that you want to minimize the amount of money that you pay to some salesman on the phone, and maximize the amount of money that you spend on actual gold or silver. Maximize the amount of money you spend on the thing that you want and minimize the transaction costs. There are certainly reputable online dealers and reputable local coin stores where people can sort of minimize the amount of markup, or it's also called spread or premium, that they pay, which of course maximizes the amount of money you get worth of gold and silver.
Tom, thanks again for that call. We're talking to Jeremy Merrill, data reporter for The Washington Post, looking at a recent analysis he did looking at gold investment advertising on especially conservative media sources, as well as Facebook and elsewhere. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you encountered this, either the ads, maybe a hard sell email, or even phone call or a series of phone calls? Do you have questions about how this all works? Join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Jeremy Merrill with the Washington Post, looking at so-called gold IRA companies that pitch unique gold coins as a retirement investment vehicle, often featuring very high markups for the precious metal, gold or silver in some cases, that you actually get. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, or stories. Back to your calls now. Randy is with us in Madison. Randy, hi.
Good afternoon. I've learned a couple things from some recent public broadcasting pieces, PBS and NPR. And big takeaways for me were that, as you mentioned, if you see one of those commercials, you're watching a conservative station. And you won't find them on regular ones. The other is that pretty much the standard commission fee is one third. And a lot of people, when they get, when these sellers get their hands around them, so to speak, they will divert their attention from that, and these guys will buy that not even knowing that they're losing a third there.
Randy, thanks a lot for the call. And Jeremy, you reached out to some of these companies to ask about that, you know, the transparency of these fees, whether the buyers really know what they're getting into. What kind of things did you hear or not hear, as the case may be?
Yeah, Randy's exactly right that a lot of the companies, they'll say somewhere in their transaction agreements that people sign. Sometimes they're more transparent about it. Sometimes it's less, depends on the company, that they're going to charge 33% or 35%. Sometimes it just says up to 35% without actually saying the exact amount that you're being charged. The companies tend to say that their disclosures are legally adequate, that this is what they're required to do, and they do it. This has come into some question as regulators from almost every state and two federal regulatory authorities have sued five or so of these gold IRA companies, all based around Los Angeles, and said that, you know, the those disclosures aren't adequate because the customers are confused. And in some cases, that they're actually charging far more than that one third. One company is alleged to have charged more than 200% as a markup for some of their coins, which is really quite a bit if you're thinking about what you'd get if you were investing your retirement savings.
Thanks a lot for that call. Patrick joins us now in Madison. Patrick, hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What did you want to bring up, Patrick?
So there are two things I want to bring up. The first is I'm only 23, but I've been a lifelong numismatist, and seeing scams related to coins is not at all surprising to me. You don't have to shake a stick very far online to find coins that are worth $20, $30 being sold for $80. So this, it being gold, is just the special thing, I guess. The other thing is that I'm not surprised that it's being marketed towards right-leaning people. There are a lot of people who are interested in precious metals who also are, shall we say, conspiratorially minded, that believe that the Federal Reserve is some sort of ploy to financially enslave the American people or something like that. So seeing that advertised to more conservative-leaning people isn't a big surprise to me either.
Patrick, thanks for that call. And Jeremy, you point out that often when we go back like to the Glenn Beck show and things like that, you might have a feature on the show about how the economy was about to collapse, you better get gold, and then a gold ad right after that.
That's exactly right. You know, this the linkage between the political right wing and the idea of gold as offering a particular kind of security goes back decades, if not centuries. But it's a linkage that is especially strong today. You'll see, as we talk about in the piece, if you watch a Trump rally on Newsmax, sometimes half the screen while Trump is talking is taken up with an ad for American Hartford Gold, which is one of these companies. A lot of the email news alerts you get from Newsmax are, again, ads for gold IRA companies that are politically themed. The ads aren't saying, hey, you should buy our gold. It's got, the pricing is good. It says, for instance, this is Biden and Yellen's secret plan to steal your hard-earned money and bail out their Wall Street buddies, was another ad. When we asked Hartford Gold about where they advertise, they say they advertise where it brings, where they believe it will create the most value.
Thanks a lot for that call. Carl is with us next in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Carl, hi.
Hi, I had started a gold IRA in 2011. And anyway, the fees increased every year. And at age 59, I was able to withdraw. So it was the Canadian gold pieces, but I had a 100-ounce bar of silver, unstamped and unmarked, and it was out of this outfit called Swiss America in Phoenix.
Hey, Carl, were you able to do something with that unmarked silver? Were you able to convert that into money to buy goods and services?
It's not stamped. It's not certified.
Interesting. Carl, thanks a lot for the call. Jeremy, have you run into any stories like that?
I've heard of that company. I don't know a ton about them. If you want to send me an email, I'll happily hear more about it to the caller. But, you know, this is an industry that has existed for quite a long time. What we wrote about may sort of be the most recent iteration. As you mentioned earlier, there was a blow up about this in around 2011. On the one side, you had Representative Anthony Weiner, who was sort of making political hay about Glenn Beck, who was then a Fox News broadcaster who had really close ties to a company called Goldline. Goldline's still in business, but they were charged with a variety of sort of misdeeds related to people buying gold back then in 2011. The case settled without them admitting any sort of wrongdoing. They said their business practices were fully transparent. But a lot of their employees soon went elsewhere. And many of them founded the companies that still exist today, including Hartford Gold that we were talked about a lot here, and Metals.com, the company I mentioned at the top of the hour, who advertised on Facebook. That company was raided by the FBI in 2020. And is no longer in business.
Thanks a lot for sharing that experience, Carl. In our last minute, Jeremy, as I mentioned, you had a follow-up piece where you talked to people, some experts about advice. One thing that seemed to be consistent from experts is, you know, if somebody's pressuring you on the phone to buy these things, if somebody's using scare tactics, that's a sign to take a closer look and back away. Can you give a sense of the sort of things that experts told you about these things? With the disclaimer, as you mentioned earlier, neither you nor I are investment advisors.
Right. I mean, that's the first thing to do is to make sure that this is the choice you want to be making. Don't fall for someone's marketing as far as what you ought to be doing with your investment, because it's your retirement savings. That's really important. You're depending on that. This is some of the best advice I heard was actually from Leslie Van Buskirk, who is the administrator of the Division of Securities there in Wisconsin at the Department of Financial Institutions. She was pointing out that every dealer charges some sort of markup because they have to pay their rent. Some of the, you know, reputable dealers charge a relatively small markup. It's far, far, far higher than you're going to see on stocks and bonds in general. But it's much smaller than some of these gold IRA companies have allegedly charged. And so what you need to do is figure out for whatever that someone is proposing to sell you, how much you could sell it for to someone else. Not how much the salesman says he might buy it back for later, but how much you could sell it for tomorrow at a local coin store in the town, you know, two towns away down the freeway, in case you needed to cash out, because that's how much it's actually worth.
Jeremy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yep, thanks for having me.
That's Jeremy Merrill, data reporter at the Washington Post. We talked to him today about targeted gold investment advertising on multiple forms of conservative media and on Facebook. We've got a link to his reporting at WPR.org/Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll take a look at investigations into Hunter Biden and what they mean for the Biden administration and beyond. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.